With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My Song Suck would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters and community. We pay our respects to them and their cultures and to the elders both past and present.
Hello and welcome to My Song Suck, the show where we listen to bad songs from good writers. I'm Alex Smith and I'm a musician.
I'm James Keogh and I'm the friend of a musician. Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome back to My Songs Suck. I'm Alex Smith.
I'm James Kehoe.
Fuck off. And we're very excited to be back in the actual studio again for the first time in a long time. What the fuck?
Some lucky D's in the biz, but we're back.
And not only are we back in the studio, we're back in the same interview that we were last week. We recorded an interview on Zoom and it fucking ate itself up, but we're happy to welcome back Gus Honeychurch.
I'm back. What's going on? Hello.
Thank you so much for coming back. What the fuck? Technology?
Ah, look, it's great when it works.
A real bloody champ to have this interview again.
Yeah, straight up.
Been wanting to get Gus on the show for a long time. Also, group chat is your name. We should be calling you group chat so people can be like, oh my God, it's group chat. Been wanting to get group chat on the show for a long time, and we did, and then we didn't, and now we have again in a way that will hopefully stay. Hopefully this was it.
We just wanted to talk with you again, Gus. We, you know, inverted commas, oh yeah, we definitely lost the recording. We just wanted an excuse to talk to you again. You're so cool.
Honestly, guys, it's my pleasure. You know, so nice we're doing it twice. Why not, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, let's manufacture a lot of moments again and act like they're happening for the first time.
No, it's fine. I'm not remotely close to outer stories. We'll have fun.
Although you
I forgot the whole last episode, so it's fine.
True.
I've got 51st dates disease. Go on.
You have actually brought us a new song, though, so that will be original and genuine. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are as an artist first?
Sure. Okay. My name's Gus. I perform my own music and produce other bands under the name Group Chat. I'm based here in Brisbane. I've been, you know, making records and working in the pop rock sort of area of music for about, I don't know, 10 years now. Group Chat's only a recent name, last several years, but, you know, I have my own music. I've done, you know, some stuff around that, but mostly I've just really enjoyed working with a few names in the local sort of Brisbane music scene and just helping people have a good old time with their own music and also just slipping my own stuff in there from time to time.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That was a good elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Ready to go. And what's this song you've brought for us today?
So in the Forgotten episode, we dived into a song from an EP I did in 2014, just on a whim with my friend Andy Liang. And I do need to dive in here again and say that the song we're about to hear is not a reflection of the skill level of the other member of this band. Andy, he was a talented musician then. He's a talented musician now. He was 100% just following me into battle on this one, and I appreciate it greatly. This is definitely my song that sucks, not Andy that sucks. I want to stress that. But yeah, this is a song from a band that I was in for one summer called, the band was called Fight Your Heroes, and the song is called Three Cheers for Apathy. And I also want to say to anyone listening, it is a 5.5 minute song. So if you're on Spotify, there's that little skip 15 seconds forward button.
It's right there.
You're completely forgiven. I haven't been able to listen to this all the way through yet. So let's do it.
We'll be right back.
Three cheers for apathy.
Oh my fucking god.
There you go, Matt. You look like you've been tortured.
That was 5 minutes of my life. I'm just never getting back. God, I'm actually sweating. I'm going to take this jacket off. Give me it. My God, man.
See, I thought that was really good.
I was jamming, for sure.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I just, oh, look. That was essentially a really badly produced 5 minute version of Skater Boy.
Right. Interesting.
Like, I mean, I don't really know what I was going for with the lyrics. I just think I really wanted to have that big pop punk epic, and there was just like, you know, all enthusiasm, zero skill. So yeah, just hurts me.
I think it hit, like, it obviously hits the mark of the pop punk stuff. It feels like it's like a Blink song or whatever, just like maybe stretched out, you know, to 5 minutes. Like, it hits all the beats of it, and there's that bit where it like sort of ends, but then there's like the breakdown comes back, blah blah blah. Yeah, it was just like a
it hits all the marks and then
version
does,
of
yeah
a,
it hits all the marks and then hits them again four more times.
Yes.
It makes me think of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh no.
Sonic fucking slaps.
Oh goodness. Yeah, look, I mean, some of the guitar was okay. Yeah. I suppose that's the redeeming thing, is some of the guitar playing was like pretty good, but everything else was awful. And we talked about this in the Forgotten episode, but I can't stand the vocal production on this EP. The microphone is backwards.
Hell yeah.
When I recorded this EP,
yep.
I did the entire thing without realizing that the microphone, it was backwards the entire time, which is why in that first verse you can hear me just screaming trying to get a good take, is because I think this is probably like the last song that we did, and I could not for the life of me figure out why it just sounded like this, and it was just excruciating. And then yeah, last day we finished, we went to pack up, and everything was the wrong way around.
That's the secret sauce, man. Turn your mics the other way.
Yeah, insider tip, guys. Turn your microphones backwards to sound like group chat. You heard it here first.
All the time.
And what you're saying, this was like a really good mic too, like this.
Oh,
is like,
yeah,
a really,
yeah,
fancy
this
mic.
This is like in terms of like quality and price, well above what I would use today in the studio to get like a good final take. It was a really good mic, and it was just not used properly, and it's a crying shame.
this show has warped my sense of quality and skill because people keep bringing in all these songs and I'm like, this is so much better than anything I could ever make in my entire life.
I gotta say, like, I said this last week and I need to say it again. I need to emphasize that I don't know how you've done four seasons of this, Alex. Like, this is my second episode and I am depressed. This is oh my goodness. Yeah, no, I guess lyrically, this song isn't as bad as the previous one that I showed you. It's got some serious soft boy energy, I think, where it's like, the girl doesn't like me. But it's like, yeah, exactly like that. But I think overall, you know, maybe if it was better produced, first and foremost, if it was better put together in that realm, maybe, and it was like 2 minutes shorter, maybe.
I'll give you that.
But goodness gracious, just not this version. Just in no world.
I'm curious because there's a definite point where it feels like the song is over.
Mm.
And then it keeps going. What was the thought process there?
I think it was a distinct lack of thought process, actually. Because I looked up the EP again. It was actually 5 songs and we did it over about 60 hours of work. A lot of which was trial and error because this is back when I was still figuring out a lot of stuff around certain aspects of production.
Which way does the mic go?
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Exactly. Which way does the microphone go? How do I sing, period? Like, how do I do that? How do you make drums that aren't an electronica beat? All these sort of things. I just don't think it would have even... crossed our minds that the song was too long because I think at the time we were just a lot. A big overarching problem with these songs is that there was not a lot of consideration to the idea that people were actually going to listen to them and they were actually going to have an effect on people in any way.
Yeah.
So the fact that it was 5.5 minutes long didn't really occur to us in the slightest. We were like, yeah, it's fine. What's wrong with a 5-minute song?
One question I have is because obviously you're now a very accomplished producer. You've been producing everyone in the entire world around Brisbane, making some very awesome stuff. Group Chat as a project is amazing. I love your stuff and everyone should go check out Group Chat on Spotify, man. And the various socials. And it seems that you're very harsh on yourself and your past stuff. I think because you now have this knowledge. So what would you now, like, obviously there's some stuff where it's like, oh, I'd tweak, you know, I'd have more 440 hertz here and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But like in like a big sweeping thing, what would you do to improve this song now? If like a person brought you this song as a demo, what would your producer brain be like, all right, here's how we're going to fix it?
First things first is I would say go back and rewrite it so that you can perform it on an acoustic guitar in under 3.5 minutes. Like that is your absolute limit. Like 3.5 minutes, any longer than that, get out.
Why acoustic?
One of the things that I've seen time and time again working with people, not just in Brisbane, all up and down the East Coast, it's a very common problem that people sometimes have an idea for a song in their head and they don't actually make it a kinetic idea in the real world before bringing it to a quote unquote professional saying they want to bring it to life. And it's so, so important. Like your brain is your brain. And ideas that work in your brain sometimes, no matter how sure you are, will not work in the real world.
Yeah.
And this song was heavily conceptualized like within Cubase, which I think has a lot to do with why there's so much, you know, guitar wankery and it's just all over the place. And I think something like this, the first thing I would go back and do is write a version that I can sit down with a guitar, put a timer on, play it and trim everything back. It should be like, with everything trimmed out, it should be like a 2.5-minute song and go from there. Like that would be step one. And then it doesn't need a guitar solo. It also doesn't need a lot of the instrumental breaks it's got. The lyrics could be better. I get a live drummer. Like I could go on and on and on, honestly. Like there's so many things. Why is there synthesizers in it? Why?
Like, I don't hate the synthesizers.
I mean, I don't hate them, but what is the purpose that they serve type thing? Like, I think, because especially with this pop punk stuff, some of it's very over the top and very lush in its production, especially like bands like Neck Deep. You look at some of their like later stuff and like there's a lot going on and it's cool. But, you know, we were obviously trying to be Green Day or Blink-182, 100%. Sure. Yep. why? Why did we think that there needed to be synthesizers in it? There's, it's anyway, yeah, yeah. Like it's a yeah. I could rant forever about how I would want to make this a better song, but that's the short list. That's the short answer. Is actual practical application before going into the studio.
Hmm. That's a very good tip. Yeah. That was a good vein of conversation.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
100%.
Curious, leading up to kind of making this album and working with your co-conspirator and so forth, like what were your musical ambitions at this point? Were you wanting to make it big in the pop punk scene? Was that the goal?
I think this actual EP was this is actually interesting with this one, because when I decided to do this EP, first of all, I never really decided to do this EP. It just kind of formed. But I was 19. I was still living in my hometown. And the classic pop punk story, really. I was in my hometown. I hated it. And I had just gotten out of my first serious relationship, and it all come crashing down. I'd had to move back in with my mom. I was a loser by pretty much every degree. And so naturally, I just started writing songs with my production, like my recording equipment that I had at the time, which was nothing spectacular by any means. I just started doing it. And then I got one song and I sent it to my friend Andy, who was, you know, doing better than me. Mind you, he had stuff going on at the time, but he was pretty much in the same boat. He wanted to be a rock and roller or whatever. And we were both still just stuck in Townsville. And so I said, you know, come on over and let's see what we can do. And then an EP just kind of formed. And it was a weird one in that, like, this was the first time, you know, in the time that we'd known each other, I feel that we were trying to make something that, like, was not meant to propel us to stardom instantly. You know, we finally kind of like started the very long process of like getting over our egos, even though the songs are terrible and extremely self-indulgent and in some instances even like hurtful. But even though that was the case with this, it was the first step in not taking ourselves so seriously and just doing something for the love of it, which is honestly, with music in my experience, that's just the first step into becoming an industry professional. It's just start doing it because you like it and then just keep doing it.
I mean, you can definitely hear at the very least that like passion and the actual like dedication to, okay, we really like pop punk. We want to do this pop punk song. Like you can tell that this isn't just a manufactured song. Like I could see it being very much like piece by piece. You know, we talk about the synthesizers that came in before. Like if this was going to be you being like, all right, this is going to be the pop punk album that we make and it breaks into the mainstream, like you probably wouldn't have taken that kind of risk. You probably wouldn't have done something outside of that. I think it definitely shows that you guys were just having fun with this.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because these songs, obviously, like in my eyes, the songs themselves age like milk, but I really enjoy that we did this, and it was definitely the sort of summer break that I needed at the time. And I do remember the whole experience very fondly. Like we used to do there were big studio days at the time. There were 12-hour studio days. By my standards these days, that's nothing. but like, yeah, we would do these big days, and then we would stop for lunch, and then we would maybe have like a break in the afternoon where we would just go and kick a football around and just talk about like what we're going to do, period, like how we're going to skin this cat of like being a professional musician. And we would just kick a football around in the field across from my house. And the whole thing is an extremely fond memory for me, and I think that's the part that makes it the entire thing worth it. This whole thing is not without a silver lining.
So what happened to this band? Because like if there was a band in Brisbane putting out tracks like this, like they should have done really well.
Well, you know, honestly, I covered off on this a little bit when we talked about this before, but I have always had these sort of two loves that I've always tried to bring together, and they're definitely more playing hand in hand now with my current sort of production style. And honestly, it was probably what I was trying to do with the synthesizers, now that I say it out loud. I have this rock world that I'm a part of, but I also have this love for electronic music, and the two have always run parallel to each other. A lot of my life I've had two aliases going at the same time where I've tried to do both. And Group Chat was the first time when I was like, stuff that, I'm going to do them both at the same time. And yeah, I just, after this sort of occurred, Andy actually moved to Brisbane very quickly out of high school. He may have actually already been living there, and this might have been his summer break. I'm not too sure, but he was not living in Townsville for much longer after that. Andy now works as a full-time musician down in Melbourne. You know, he does podcast editing and all kinds of stuff. So
nice.
He's definitely, you know, found his own way with this stuff as well. And he does his own music as well. and has had a lot of amazing opportunities and stuff. And we've remained firm friends. But when it came time to do more stuff, our schedules just never really aligned. Honestly, after high school, it's been hard to get us in the same place at the same time. And even though I love the style of music, the other thing about pop punk, if you're making it in this sort of caliber and where it's like very quote unquote purist, is that there's not actually a lot of wiggle room to push and poke and prod, especially when you're trying to build a fan base and you're just starting out. Like, you may be, if you were to do something like this as your first release for a project, you may be locked in to do just straight pop punk for like two EPs and two albums before you can sort of start like trying to do your own thing. Yeah, case in point, Blink 182.
Yeah.
Like, and that is the idea of being cased in creatively is terrifying.
I feel that.
Yeah.
That's something I've always wondered about the pop punk scene specifically, because to an unseasoned listener who doesn't listen solely to pop punk, one could say that a lot of pop punk bands sound very similar. Mm. I know I used to, well, I guess I am still friends with them, but I have friends who used to / are still in pop punk bands.
Mm.
And to my ear, they both sounded exactly the same. Mm-hmm. And they both sounded like watered down versions of each other. Like, mm-hmm. the names were even like, mm-hmm. you know, tree, forest, oh, this is our band, wood,
mm-hmm.
you know, wood branch. And they always sounded like watered down versions of Blink 182.
Mm-hmm.
So like, is it possible to be a pop punk artist and not just sound like every single other person? Or is that kind of a thing, you know? Or is that just my ear? You know, I am not listening to it properly.
I think it's a matter of how close you want to get to that scene. So if you were the kind of person who, and I was this person at one point, if you are the kind of person who's listening to, you know, exclusively pop punk and other sort of pseudo similar genres in that vein, it's obviously going to be a lot easier for you to sort of pick the different bands and their unique spin on it apart. But definitely in the last 10 years of that genre, it's actually become very much its own sound. Mm-hmm. And it's a style that a lot of new bands try very specifically to adhere to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you think back to the idea of like the early bands that were sort of pioneering the sound of like Green Day and Blink 182, they're the two that we keep coming back into.
Yeah.
So they were literally just taking punk rock music and making it more accessible, and let those cards fall where they want, you know, let that just be the way that happened. And the sound that they landed on, they honestly, they're too wild. When you listen to their early stuff, they're wildly different bands. Yeah. They're super, super different. And they were quite different for vast majority of their careers. But it got to the point where people kept trying to refine that sort of sound down more and more and more and more, and pull certain elements from other genres. Like, you know, there's the classic trope of, you know, the heavy metal drummer in high school who wanted to join a metal band, but all the kids wanted to play pop punk. So you get a metal drummer in a pop punk band. That's how we get our, like, now what we consider modern pop punk drums, which is just dressed up beat downs and so on and so forth.
Right.
It's now very much its own sound, and it's very much leading its own charge. It's sort of become its own beast, which is why, because it's such a specific sound, so many of these bands seem to sound the same. But the thing is, if you like that sound, great.
Yeah.
You've got a huge, huge pool to dive into. And it's even more exciting when you can find a band that's doing that and then doing something different that is, like, even to the casual listener, setting them apart.
Yeah.
Right. Well, you mentioned the sort of the two worlds, you know, that you enjoy, the sort of pop punk or the performance side, and then there's also the electronic sort of DJ stuff. Is there shared DNA there, or what is it that sort of compels you to both these sides of music?
Honestly, I got my start in performing with, you know, other people in projects that weren't associated with high school, basically. I started in punk bands. I started in pop punk bands. You know, we were covering Bowling for Soup and, you know, a bunch of other classics, Forever the Sickest Kids, even like, you know, your classic Pop Goes Punk covers. We did the Lady Gaga cover, the whole nine yards.
Sure.
And that was a lot of fun, and I fell in love with that. And I was always first and foremost, you know, a guitarist. But I think the thing for me was, I was like 14 when dubstep became a thing. I was right in the thick of that, like what was supposed to be catching my ear. And
right
back then, especially as a guy who was already meant to be recording, well, performing music, not recording it at that age, but dubstep was like black magic. Like, we couldn't understand how these guys were making sounds from a laptop that was suddenly heavier and more violent than the heaviest heavy band we could go and see at like the PCYC on the weekend.
Yeah.
Right.
They had outdone us. We were outgunned in pretty much every capacity and we could not figure it out. Mm. And so I wanted to figure it out. And then that, like, you think that the pop punk rabbit hole is expansive. Wait until you get into VSTs and synthesizers and, you know, all the different styles of EDM and all the different like little subgenres and black holes that can just suck you in. And my mom bought me a copy of Native Instruments Massive when I was like 15 and some really bad, like a really bad Sony Acid digital audio workstation.
Nice.
And that was it. Like when I wasn't at band practice, I was at home taking my favorite YouTube clip and using it as a sample for a terrible dubstep drop. And
nice.
They kind of just spiraled out of control in parallel.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have all these fucking pop punk questions.
Fire away,
James,
man.
Do you have any questions?
Go for it. No, please.
Well, I'll try and do them quick.
Okay.
Do you think that four chord songs should be avoided? Because I'm trying to write pop punk songs and they all end up being four chord songs.
No.
Oh, I see. This is advice. This is the advice portion of the show.
I'm a musician and I'm asking questions and there's audiences who are also musicians who also probably want to ask these questions as well.
If you can write a passable four chord song, good for you. If you can write a good four chord song, congratulations. Here's a Grammy.
Hooray!
That's my answer. Like yes, it's been done a million times, but that doesn't mean that it can't be done again.
Yeah. What makes a song pop punk instead of pop or punk?
Well, it's like I said, the pop punk sound, now that it's been refined down over all these years, is very much a specific sound. Now you can look at, you know, bands like The Story So Far, Knuckle Puck, Neck Deep, guys that have been leading the charge in that sort of sound for the last decade or so. And it's a very identifiable sound. It's neither pop nor punk. It's pop punk. It's a completely separate entity.
What are the essential elements of pop punk if you had to just fire them off?
Hate your hometown, have a couple of toxic ex-girlfriends, a drummer that would rather be in a metal band, and potentially a substance abuse problem. No, I'm kidding. Drums, bass, guitar, and good vocal harmonies, and so on and so forth. It's pretty stock standard.
I think that's all my pop punk questions.
I'm glad I could help.
I'm sorry that I did it.
That's all right.
There was a good sort of thread, a good vein that we found last time we had this discussion, and I hate to keep referring back to
the forgotten episode.
Yeah. The forgotten episode, but I did want to touch on it again, and couldn't find a good segue into it, so I thought just sort of
fire away,
you know, just jump into it. Let's talk about the business side of music, because that's something that we talked about a lot last time.
Really
good,
absolutely,
you know, observations on. I guess the way we found our way into it is that if you had to go to school now, you wouldn't do it for music, you would do it for business. So why is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So for me, just with my personal experience with working as a musician, I have learned a lot of things the hard way. Case in point, the song that I showed you at the start. You know, backwards microphones, problematic lyrics, infighting in band. I've done it all. Like, I've made all the mistakes, or at least I've made an appropriate amount of mistakes for the amount of time that I've been doing this. And as a result of that, I find myself now at a point where certain people who have, you know, gone to university in, you know, at UQ and at the con have told me that, you know, you may find some benefit in going to school for music, but for the most part, for you, it would be more of a networking opportunity, is to just be around more like-minded musicians, which is an exciting idea in and of itself. But for me personally, if I was going to go back to school for something like this and dedicate that kind of time, I'd want to make sure that I was getting something out of it that like wasn't going to miss. And one of the biggest shortcomings of my musical career so far is a lack of business sense. It has always been the thing that has shot me in the foot. It's the reason that I've undervalued myself as a performer and as a producer for years. For years, I would just work for free. Because I just thought that was just the done thing. And I was 100% happy to race everybody else to the bottom. Back when I was living in Townsville, that was just how I operated. And it wasn't until I started, you know, interning at like proper studios and seeing how actual industry professionals valued their time and priced their skills to people that I realized that, like, you actually have to put some authority to your own name if you actually want to make this a career that you can actually pay your bills with. Yeah, so I definitely have like a conscious incompetence of the business aspects of, you know, music. So if I was to look into a degree, it'd probably be a business degree first and foremost. And I know I'm not the only one. too. It's extremely common from what I've seen, you know, musicians struggling with this stuff because, you know, we're artists first and foremost. Yeah. The last thing an artist wants to do is start thinking about branding or marketing and press. It's very not rock and roll. And so people try to avoid it, but that is the thing that costs them. I guess if I could say one thing on it, you know, in my very limited experience is that, like, you know, if you don't want to be that guy that is dealing with that, then be ready to outsource everything and be ready for it to cost you money to hire someone who has done the business degree. But yeah.
Right. Because I guess there's also just, a certain level of street smarts that you have to have. And I mean, you mentioned the stuff that you sort of learned the hard way. So I guess it's sort of for those who, you know, maybe didn't get the opportunity to really sort of hit the grindstone early and they wouldn't, there'd be a bit of naivety that they'd end up getting beaten out of them at a certain point in their career.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. I'm very fortunate to have finally crawled after like however long doing this. I'm very fortunate to have crawled to a point where I'm at like conscious incompetence level where I can sort of sit here on a day-to-day basis and just say I know that I don't know what I'm talking about a lot of the time, whereas a lot of people can very frequently with the business side of the industry just kind of walk around with their head in the sand and be like, oh, I don't know, I guess I'll sign a record deal at some point and that'll be it, I'll go straight to the top. And if that happens to you, great, call me and tell me how you did it. But like, yeah, normally it's a lot more than that.
You mentioned during the Forgotten episode that you signed up to a record deal and you got fucked and they disappeared.
Yeah. Several times. So yeah, with the DJing side of things, I signed away intellectual property and masters over to record labels multiple times when I was sort of starting out because I thought that that was the done thing to do in that time period, is that it had to go on a label because of course it did, when in reality it wasn't actually bringing all that much to the table. I probably could have just done a little bit more research and done an independent release and it would have been just as good, if not better. But like when you give that master to somebody and you sign it over to them in a legal contract and they own that, now they own the finalized version of that song, it's theirs. And then the problems began to arise, you know, years and years down the track when I would look up these labels purely out of morbid curiosity, just to see how they were doing and maybe see if I could get the masters back from them, revise the contract and see if, like, you know, and that way I can put it in some sort of like archive for myself or you know, something. And like these labels had folded.
Yeah.
The EDM boom was over. There was no number for me to call. There was no way for me to reach out to these people to reclaim this lost intellectual property. And this was the danger of, you know, small labels in like 2014. This was the sort of thing that you had to watch out for, is because all they really needed to do was get a distribution license for like Beatport and they could say that they were a label and it could be anybody, and they're not really doing that much for you. And these are the kind of hard knocks that you learn when you don't go to university for music first and foremost.
I have two questions regarding that. As number one, who the fuck do you think you are? Now, number one, as someone who's completely ignorant of law, what's to stop you from just fucking doing it? They ain't around. Fuck them.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's so true. That's so true. But here's the thing. It was, for me personally, it was the only thing that was stopping me was my own negligence. I was trying to get a hold of them. Of being like, hey, do you still have those masters? Because I don't. They're long gone from my hard drives. You know, that computer, I don't know, fell in a creek like 6 years ago or something like that. Yeah. So that was the reason that I sort of started chasing that up. But you're right. If I still had them, then the short answer, nothing.
Can you buy them off Beatport and then sell them as your own?
I actually haven't even looked if they're still up on Beatport. I was like, yeah, maybe. But there's also like automated licensing stuff. I have a beef with Sony over this because I got a couple of friends who are trying to use group chat songs on their Twitch streams. They keep getting automated takedowns and strikes against these songs. And then they have to keep contesting them because Sony thinks that it owns Everybody Loves by group chat, which is bullshit.
Are you signed up with a distribution label from Sony at all?
No, I'm on DistroKid, baby. I'm completely independent.
Why is Sony stepping in? What the fuck's that?
It's just an automated algorithm. And this is the problem that I would face. I imagine if they have done the right thing, then there may be an automated algorithm I would have to face by redistributing my own music. Because if it gets taken down and I get a strike against my name on some social media platform, I can go, that's my song. And they can go, no, it's not. It belongs to Hestia Records in Germany. They signed it in 2014. It doesn't belong to you. And I'd be like, yes, it is. And they could be like, prove it. And I'd be like, well, I actually can't, but you're just going to have to believe me.
I guess my other question is, what, if any, reason is there to sign up to a record label in the modern day now?
Honestly, it really depends. The
big question to throw at you, group chat.
I mean, I think the main thing that the classic reason that you would get a record label, to my understanding, and bear in mind, I'm the one without the business degree here. So like, but the classic understanding of it is, if you are a musician who does not have a lot of money, then potentially you can sign to a label and they will pay you an advance that you can then take and use to make a record. And then they will help you. Once you give them that record, they will help you sell that record, maybe, or it'll have to go through another distributor. Maybe the record label knows a distributor. It doesn't matter. They'll get it out to the people somehow and they will make that money back by selling the record. And this whole just hinges off the label being like, yes, we think we can make that money back and make some money off of this because we think you sound good. Mm-hmm. And obviously the big catch there back in the day was that if you sign that record label and they give you X amount of money, then you need to give that money back before you do anything else. And this is why you get, you know, horror stories of people from the 80s who signed a 6-record deal and then proceeded to put their entire advance up their nose or in their arm or any other drug of choice. And that's where problems begin.
Yeah.
And you start fighting with labels. But so that was the original reason. And that was before the decentralization of music studios. It became a lot less gatekeepy. We've had like the renaissance of the home studio in the last like 20 years.
Yeah.
Right.
So now it's a lot more of like a support system thing. In my mind, a good label would be, if I was really, really stuck on something, but I wanted to do something cool, I could call them and be like, you may not have anyone for this, but do you know someone who can maybe help with this? Like if there was a particular industry thing I wanted to achieve, then a label might be someone with funding who could come on to make that happen.
Right. We're in the renaissance of the home studio age, but like that just means that attention is such a commodity. And I feel like a label sort of would also get more eyes on you if they can sort of use that sort of network or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But you know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, an independent distributor, release it on your own little, give it your own little name, put it out on CD Baby, DistroKid. And then instead of maybe a record label, if exposure is what you want, maybe you can hire a PR manager or something to that degree.
Other ways around that, for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that a record label can do for you, but there's a lot of other industry professionals that can help you achieve certain things. It doesn't all just run through a record label.
I feel like we're getting towards the end, and I can start asking the fun,
winding down
kind of thing.
Chilling out.
So I guess, what piece of advice do you wish that you, Gus Honeychurch, had received when you were just starting out?
Honestly, circling back to the song and how it was sort of the process of like getting over our own egos, like, you know, by getting the 5.5-minute songs out of our system and just honestly just being wankers so that we could learn how to not be wankers further on down the road. If I was in front of that guy now, I would just say like, dude, you've got to get over yourself. Like the best musicians I know are professional, but they still don't take themselves that seriously. There's no place for ego in this industry. There really isn't. There really, really isn't. If you're difficult to work with, you won't get worked with. The best way to become, you know, any semblance of like a quote unquote rock star is to stop trying to be one. Yeah.
That's good advice.
That is good advice.
James, do you have any questions?
Any chill out, wind down questions?
Yeah, they're nice.
I suppose moving forward, you know, now with the knowledge of all the years behind you, what's your goals in the future?
Honestly, I kind of find myself in a weird position of power. You know, for the first time, I've got this, I'd say, pseudo successful solo project that I've got going on that more than anything, I think, for especially with, you know, the song that we'll end on, I imagine, you know, with everything there, it's, I feel like I've got a lot of respect from like my peers Which is something that, you know, I've always been, you know, respected by the people who have been happy to work with me, but I definitely feel like I can sort of stand tall and be proud of my achievements as a musician and as a producer for the first time. Just in these last 2 years, that's sort of come to fruition. I'm really like unapologetically proud of what I'm doing at the moment. So moving forward, honestly, the short answer is I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah,
and I'm going to
yeah.
have a really, really good time. And I really just hope that I get to keep meeting awesome people in the Brisbane scene and working with them as much as I can and writing the best songs that I can make and honestly just doing it because that's what I'm doing now and I'm loving it.
Hell yeah. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Yeah, I'm I'm also sponsored by McDonald's.
Good.
I know.
So, you know.
McGroup chat.
Someday.
It's bloody spooky dooky Friday the 13th. Thank you very much for being on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Twice.
Yeah, it's been great both times, honestly.
I can't believe that we hit every single word for word the same
it
as it was last
yeah. scripted. We'd written it all down.
I'm so glad we had that transcript ready.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very real performances, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But where can people find you, give yourself a big spruik.
Pitch. So you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, other socials at Hey It's Group Chat. You can give us a follow there depending on whatever you're more partial to. Please go listen to the song that you're about to hear now. It's called Just Breathe. It's featuring the amazing Late November. It was a real pleasure to work with them. They're an amazing band and Alex is an incredible vocalist. If this is coming out on the 13th, I mean, yes, what are you talking about? It is the 13th. You can listen to some of my latest production work. I did the mixing on the new Slut Witch record called Dead Birds. It is out yesterday, so you can get amongst that. They're a fantastic Brisbane hyperpop group. What else? Let's see. No, that's all I got off the top of my head. Go do those two things.
Nice.
Very good.
I can also vouch very much for Group Chat. I've wanted to have him on the show for so long. Really good stuff. Really good, like, pop, rocky, theatery kind of stuff. Definitely go check it out. If you're like, what song do I listen to? Trainwreck was the song I listened to that got me into him first. And I had a great fun making the advert for...
Everybody Loves.
Everybody Loves.
I would love to get you back to do another one of those, by the way. I enjoyed that immensely.
I would love to do another one. They're lots of fun. James, do you have anything to plug?
Well, I'd like to plug the show that you're listening to right now. Oh. This is My Song Suck. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at My Song Suck. You can follow us for updates on episodes as they come out and where you can find the guests and so forth. So do check us out. Give us a like and a follow. Yeah. What about you, Alex? What do you do?
Well, I clean floors for a living for $22.
Hey.
But when I'm not doing that, I'm a musician. I'm called Your Man Alex Smith. I've got a Bandcamp, Spotify, and iTunes. If you got no money, check it out on Spotify. If you do got money, check it out on Bandcamp. If you got more money, check me out on Patreon. I just released an album called Slow Burn. It took me 4 years to make. What the fuck? It's really good, I think.
It is really good.
I just had this animated music video from the Tales of Alethreon team, Scowled. They have the Tales of Alethreon series on YouTube. It's really good. It's a cowboy thing. It's animated. It's 2D, traditional animation. Fuck yeah. Definitely check it out. For the love of God, fuck. It was so much work. Please, Christ, listen to it.
I have the design stills for Align, the Align music video, the drawings. I have those on the wall in my home studio. They're awesome. Nice. I love it.
Complete with the spelling mistake. Indiegogo team.
So good.
Yee-hoo. I think that's everything.
I think that's about it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
so
you so much for coming on.
Again.
My pleasure, guys. I've wanted to do this for a long time. I'm so happy that I got the chance. Thank you.
Hell yeah. And this is Just Breathe.
Better than the deity I'm born within, the human that you think I am. I stay a little longer?
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.